Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story. We break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. 15th day of January, which means it is a week and a half since the big snowstorm that hit the St. Louis area, and many people still don't have their streets clean, and apparently their city is having a meeting on that today to talk about it with people concerned. I mean, parents angry probably that their streets are still what they would consider dangerous this far out. I've been following our friend Andy Banker over at Fox 2. He showed video of a city truck going down a city side street yesterday, and Like horse manure in a garage, it's not something you see very often. Maybe in the past 30 years of living in St. Louis, I can't remember the last time I saw it. And I guess they're finally reacting to all the complaints from the people that live in the city on the side streets where the plows have not touched it. And they're finally, there was video yesterday of a truck that appeared to be putting down maybe some sand or ice. But I don't know, Carl, what does your street look like?
It looks the same. There's the north side of the street where the sun hits. That row where tires would be is clear. But the south side where the sun does not get, because everything's in shadows, it is solid ice on the right side of where you would be driving.
It just sounds like we're treating this like it was the blizzard of 78 or 82 or whichever the last one was that hit here. Was it 82?
Yeah, my sister was born then.
Yeah. And I'm not sure it rose to that level. I just think that we've become lazy and lackadaisical in how we approach highway cleaning.
Well, that was
highway cleaning.
14 inches of snow back then.
The city should get an earful. This is ridiculous. They have plenty of pickup trucks. You can put a smaller plow on there where it's not going to hit the cars, if that's the concern, a liability issue. And if that's too big of a risk factor, then my gosh, go out there, just pick up a bag of salt, of sand, salt, whatever, and start throwing it. Use your hands that God gave you and start throwing them on the street. It is not that hard. This is a problem. Think about elderly people.
I know.
Or parents who have young children. Well, parents are worried about slipping themselves on the ice, but then you think about these children who were trying to maybe, you know, go to the bus stop, and they're basically skating to the bus stop. What happens when somebody slips and falls and breaks their leg? Are they able to then sue the city for not picking up the cleaning up the streets? Or can they just say, well, that's just not something that we do, so we're not liable for that?
I do not know.
I believe there is a law. If you start it, you have to finish it. But if you don't start it, then it is a...
Then you're not responsible for it.
You're liable for not
knowing. Wow, what a great mindset.
Yeah.
Share. Very motivational.
Some good lawyer drew that one up, but for sure. We'll have more on that meeting for you tomorrow. Hopefully you get a little bit of relief. The nature's going to give you some relief by Friday. It's going to be of nearly 50 degrees and potentially raining. So that ought to finish up what the city has not yet quite accomplished. And there's probably some rural areas, I imagine, to the south of St. Louis where they've still got some problems because of how cold it's been. It was 3 degrees when I left the house this morning. It has warmed up a bit since then. What's it showing up there on the screen, Carl?
It has gone up 10 degrees,
oh,
Mark.
It's excellent. 13. We're at 13 this morning.
With a wind chill of 13 as well.
And it's warming up. So coming up, we're going to get to Jonathan Savage from Fox News Radio. He's live in Israel this morning with word of a potential ceasefire agreement. I got to hear what's in it, and I'll be hearing that at the same time you will when we get Jonathan on here to determine whether or not I think this is in the best interest of Israel to negotiate with these terrorists. Heard Pete Hegseth say yesterday, you know, what's your feel on this? And he goes, I think Israel should continue till it wipes out every last member of Hamas. And I couldn't agree with him more. If they slip in something like this, it's going to prevent that, I'm afraid. So we'll see what happens here at the bottom of the hour. All that coming up. First, though, Carl, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Take a look at the monthly change in Google searches. Look at climate change. Look at the change. It doesn't go hand in hand with wildfires. It's actually down. It's down 9%.
CNN reporting there that Americans are not blaming the wildfires in California for climate change because they know it's been going on for years. More likely to be just government incompetence.
We're not waiting until those fires are over to start helping the victims. People impacted by these fires are going to receive one-time payment of $770. One-time payment.
Yeah, there you go. Now, I don't know why they're getting $40 more than the people in North Carolina. I haven't figured that out or exactly what you're supposed to do with it. Maybe it gives you enough to buy a couple of meals or a basket full of groceries in L.A. But that's what Joe Biden's saying as he heads out the door. By the way, he's giving his final speech tonight, and we're going to cover it right here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, in short, I think Pete Hegseth kicked their asses today. I mean, it wasn't even close. They didn't lay a glove on Hegseth. No mistakes. Calm, cool, collected.
Yep. Scott Jennings pretty much spelling it out. I didn't see anybody trip up Pete Hegseth yesterday, including all of the quite angry Democrats who in some points cases were yelling at him.
Briefed by a JAG officer. Well, by the way, would you explain what a JAG off is?
I don't think I need to, sir.
Why not?
Because the men and women watching understand.
Well, perhaps some of my colleagues don't understand.
It would be a JAG officer who puts his or her own priorities in front of the warfighters. Their promotions, their medals, in front of having the backs of those who are making the tough calls on the front lines.
That was one of the Democratic senators who had read Pete Hegseth's book on what he thinks wrong with the military based on his experience. And apparently he did refer to, at some point in the book, he refers to the Judge Advocate Corps as some of them being JAG offs. And so the senator thought, I'm going to embarrass him here and make him explain exactly what he meant by that. And I thought he it was a curveball, but I thought he handled it pretty effectively. Here's what it means. They're putting their career advancement in front of the best interests of the men and women who are serving.
Do you think that people like Pete Hegseth, you know, who have to go for these Senate confirmation hearings, have some level of coaching?
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they have, I mean, it would be very difficult to field all those questions and not, I mean, I would be the person who would want to say too much. You have to be so strategic about the way you respond to these questions.
For most of them, especially I know the Supreme Court nominees, they do have a senator attached to them who is responsible for probably coaching or saying, okay, when you get to Elizabeth Warren, here's what she's going to try to do to you, because they've observed all this in so many of these hearings. When you get to Mazie Hirono, here's how she's going to attack you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be prepared for these things. Don't say this. Don't seem snarky. Whatever you do, don't try to mansplain something to her. I mean, I'm sure they were giving him advice like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, what to say, what not to say. Yeah, well, but this is so different. This is like when you're different. On trial and you just have to be so careful what you say.
But he was a host. He had to interview people all the time.
No, I know. But I interviewed people all the time being in TV, and I would still be terrible at this. I would still need some level of coaching to not say certain things that seem like it wouldn't be a big deal, but it actually could be very hurtful.
Bingo. I think she's exactly right. I didn't know you could be a TV host and... or a radio host and be in a situation like that and think you're being witty and it could just snowball on
you.
Oh,
I know.
You have to be really careful because they're all pretty sharp people with the exception of Maisie Hirono and they'll catch you if you're not careful. I thought he handled it very well yesterday personally. Coming up, there are... What I printed this off, like four or five more nomination hearings getting underway today. So we're going to talk about that coming up here with our friend Genevieve Wood. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in Israel with Jonathan Savage on the possibility of a ceasefire.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's about what your focus is. I mean, the reason people in California are unhappy is because the priorities over the last few years, over the last few decades, maybe in California, maybe haven't been on just competent governance. I mean,
the stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Genevieve Wood joining us, senior advisor at the Heritage Foundation. Genevieve, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. That was
we can still say that, right?
We can. If you haven't spoken to somebody since the New Year, that's perfectly fine, right?
There we go.
That was Scott Jennings, who's the only voice of common sense many times on CNN these days. And he was pointing out to the other people at the desk there that people have a right to be frustrated with what they see going on in California. And the it's not playing politics to point that out, because the same politicians get elected over and over. They keep instituting the same policies, and suddenly there's massive wildfires like they have very often in Southern California this time of year, and there's no water in the fire hydrants.
There's no water. There's no a lot of things. There's a bunch of fire trucks that are apparently set up over for repair, like 100 fire trucks that are in repair shops right now that would have been very useful over the past 2 weeks. Look, there's a lot that went wrong, and you have a lot of now people who live there who maybe haven't been paying attention or, frankly, are leftists of center and have been voting for these jokers for years at the mayoral level and at the state government level. And all of a sudden, they're like, wait a minute, I pay taxes. Why is there no money in the fire hydrants? Why are we so busy handing out drug kits to, you know, drug addicts on our streets as opposed to preventing fires? And nobody's saying, hey, we're never going to have a fire in California again. It would have been possible to completely never have had this fire start. People are not being unreasonable. They're just saying, it seems we weren't prepared to deal with fires when they happen, and we were not set up to make it a much smaller event than it ended up being.
Right.
I mean, that's the reality, is that they're going to have fires out there. The question is, can you control them? Can you maintain them? Can you prevent some of them? And in this case, the answer to all of those was we weren't ready. I mean, with every single thing, they weren't ready to stop them. They weren't ready to slow them down. They weren't prepared to contain them. And you've seen the complete disaster that's come from that lack of preparedness.
Great article in the Daily Signal today called A Well-Deserved Takedown of the California Political Class. And it points out that this past week, they started to lay the first track for a high-speed rail project from L.A. to the Bay Area. Talk about a time-suck boondoggle. They approved this, the voters did, back in 2008 when it was expected to cost $9.9 billion. The cost has now bloomed to $100 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
And they just laid the first track.
It's called inflation, and it's called a slight delay. I mean, it's been almost 20 years since voters passed that, and now they're just now going to start building it. And I mean, and it's same thing with filling up the reservoirs, Mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, they talked about, you know, the voters, they passed a thing to build new reservoirs and fill them up and all this, and none of that has happened.
Right.
None of that has happened. Yeah. Meantime, you know, all these crazy programs or a bunch of other things that are destroying the state have all been funded, have all been happening. I mentioned them, like, you know, taking care. We of course, want to take care of homeless people, but encouraging programs that increase their numbers on the streets and handing out drug kits. Everybody's seen the pictures from L.A., from San Francisco. These cities have become unlivable for many people because of the homeless and drug crisis problem. Yet that's where these officials have been spending their time, and yet the problem's been getting worse there too. So you have to start scratching your head and saying, wait a minute, they're not good at anything. I mean, nothing.
It's true.
Genevieve, did you get a chance at all to watch some of the Senate confirmation hearing for Pete Hegseth yesterday?
I did. I thought he did quite well.
Yeah, and there are what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I believe 6 more hearings will take place today, including Sean Duffy, Secretary of Transportation, John Ratcliffe, Director of the CIA, Marco Rubio, Chris Wright, Secretary of Energy, Pam Bondi, Department of Justice. All these hearings are getting underway this morning, starting at 9. They're moving quickly here.
Great watching Congress have to work.
Oh my gosh.
This is awesome. These senators actually have to show up and work, you know. No, it's great. Look, I think Hegseth did a great job yesterday. The left, you know, the not surprising, many of the attacks that came from Democratic senators, I don't think they were particularly effective. I think that Pete Hegseth did what he had to do, which is show, I know what the priorities of the Department of Defense are, and that's what I'm about fixing. And I think that was clearly communicated. I think people could see with their own eyes. The reality is our defense team, meaning our military, is not where it needs to be. Recruitment is down across the board, and yet all these woke DEI policies, the same kind of stuff that lit up fires in California because that's where the officials have been focused, as opposed to their core jobs, that's been happening in our military too. And you know what that means is when something comes up, is our military, like this firefighting team out there, going to be ready? And right now the answer is that's very questionable,
That's a good point. I direct
and
people.
And so we need people who know what the core mission of their job is. They need to know what the core mission of the Department of Defense is, what's the core mission of the Department of Energy. It's not to plug up, you know, fossil fuels and say we can't drill. No, it's to find ways to get the cheapest, cleanest resources to the American public so we're not buying it from other places. That's what people need to focus on in these hearings.
You bet. DailySignal.com or Heritage.org. Go check them out there. Genevieve Wood, thank you.
Kim, Mark, thank you.
Yep, talk to you soon. Appreciate that. Coming up, we'll check in over in Israel, find out what's going on with a possible ceasefire. All right, welcome back. I told you earlier in the show we're monitoring these developments over in Israel where it appears a deal is imminent, is the reporting we're hearing so far, on some sort of a ceasefire deal. We've asked Jonathan Savage from Fox News Radio to join us with an update on this. Jonathan, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, so what are we hearing, and when do we think this might take effect? What's it look like?
Yeah, there's a lot of hope that this could happen in the next hours or days. And certainly there's a sort of de facto deadline of January 20th, inauguration day, for an agreement for a truce and a hostage release between Israel and Hamas. Now, negotiators are talking again in Qatar to sort of piece together the final details of what is a very complex and phased deal on the table. There have been reports this morning that Hamas has given the green light to the deal, but then the Israeli Prime Minister's office has denied that. They say Hamas has yet to answer the deal. But there is, like I say, optimism with Israeli negotiators, Hamas negotiators, and mediators from the United States, Egypt, and Qatar.
So the only detail that I read that caught my attention was that it was going to involve the release of 1,000 Palestinian prisoners currently being held by Israel. And what is Israel in terms of hostages expected to get for that?
Yeah, here is how we think it would work. The stage one would last about 6 weeks. Over the six-week period, Israel would receive back 33 hostages from Hamas. They have around 100, and it's thought about two-thirds of them are still alive. The hostages who would be released in stage one are expected to be women, children, the elderly, sick people, injured people, and Palestinian prisoners would be sent back in return. During this stage as well, Israeli troops would begin pulling out of the populated areas of Gaza, restationing themselves near the border. And again, during this first stage, there would be detailed negotiations on stage two and stage three, which would see the remaining hostages released. And yes, you're right. 1,000 prisoners is the number that Israel is thought to have agreed to release in exchange for the hostages.
A couple questions. I mean, I know you're saying that they think that about 35 of the remaining hostages are presumed dead, but what if we find out that the majority of them are dead? And the other thing the question I would have would be talking about 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. I don't know how many there are total over there, but I mean, are they picking them? Like, do they get to pick the worst of the worst people to have them released?
Firstly, on the Israeli hostages, Israel say they presume most of the 33 who would be released in the first phase are alive, but it's not entirely clear which of the hostages are alive or dead. It's not entirely clear if Hamas knows exactly where all of them are, because they've been scattered around Gaza, we understand. They've been given, in some cases, to Hamas's allies, Islamic Jihad, to hold on to. So, yeah, there are unanswered questions there. And in terms of the people who Israel would be releasing, the 1,000 Palestinian prisoners, the Hamas, we understand, sent Israel a list of people they wanted to have released, and Israel agreed to 1,000 names. Of those 1,000, officials say that about 190 of them are serving sentences of 15 years or more. Some will be detained for minor offenses, but others have been convicted of crimes as serious as murder.
Wow. Jonathan Savage joining us now from reporting on a potential ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. So, Jonathan, you mentioned the January 20th deadline, next Monday. Is the deadline because they want to get this in place before Donald Trump has a direct impact on it? Or is it they're trying to get it in place because they expect a change of policy under Donald Trump?
I think the Biden administration would love to have something before they leave office. And I think Donald Trump's team would like for this not to be hanging over the early weeks of their return to power. And the Trump team is having already a direct impact on talks. Donald Trump sent his envoy, Steve Witkoff, to participate in these negotiations. The Qataris, who are hosting the talks, they say that the Biden administration and the Trump team are working in tandem, and that's been really helpful, they say, in pushing the deal forward.
Good. All right. Jonathan Savage, we appreciate the details there, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Have a great day. We'll listen to his reports on that from Fox News Radio throughout the day as well, if anything breaks. He thinks hours or they keep mentioning by Thursday. For some reason, tomorrow keeps coming up as the time when this might kick in.
So murderers will be released.
Of course.
Prison. I mean, that's just sickening. They're allowing, they're demanding murderers be released from prison who are rightfully serving, I don't know if it's in some cases a life sentence or he said 15 years, in exchange for people that they took and held hostage and in some cases have tortured or killed. It's just awful. That just makes me so mad.
I know you would feel differently about it if you were related to one of the hostages.
You're absolutely right.
I know people want to get the hostages back. But what is the death toll now? 1,300 people in Israel who were killed on October 7th. Obviously, more have been killed since in this attack, this brutal attack. We've heard all the details of how awful it was, killing babies and raping women and killing, murdering in these villages. This is the direct result. If you release 1,000 prisoners who are serving sentences for violence against Israelis, they're going to go right back to doing what they were doing before. And you've suddenly negotiated with terrorists, mm-hmm. which sends a signal to every terrorist in the world. All we have to do if we want to go commit terror is go kill a bunch of people and then take hostages, and eventually they'll have to negotiate with us.
But I mean, to your point, what you said earlier, if one of the hostages were my child, my mom, my dad, my sibling, my friend, I would want to do anything I could to get them released.
I agree. I agree.
You're right. It's easy for me to say that now when I don't have any personal connection to one of the hostages.
But my point, my deal is they will never give up all the hostages. It's the only thing that keeps Israel from turning the entire Gaza Strip into a gravel parking lot.
Yeah.
That's it. They'd bomb it all to the ground if there were no hostages hidden in tunnels over there somewhere.
And how do we even trust the numbers they're giving us? Like, they would, you know, sit there and say, oh, 30,000 people were killed in this attack by Israel. And then, of course, that gets filtered to the United States and people are protesting on college campuses. I'm like, guys, you're believing a terrorist group, the information that they're telling you. Of course they're going to inflate that number. And in part, the reason why many people were dying more than they needed to was because you have to remember that they were setting up these tunnels and all of these places where they had, you know, military equipment, you know, guns and everything in schools and hospitals, places where Israel, no country would want to attack it. But when you have these high level terrorists who are hiding out there, you have to do something.
We can, you know, we continue to cover the Hegseth nomination yesterday. They asked him how he felt about it. And he said he supports Israel continuing its effort until every member of Hamas is dead.
Yeah.
I don't know how an agreement like this helps that, because you're not going to wipe Hamas off the map as long as you're agreeing to cease fires with them. I don't know.
Well, and Iran is backing them. And then you think about Biden, he unfroze, what was it, $6 billion in assets for them. And then this happened just months later. And of course, they're like, oh, we're not going to use it for terrorism. We're going to use it for necessary things.
Five more days.
Give me a break.
And this is what will be sickening. Carl said they've already released the transcript of Biden's speech tonight.
But at least part of it.
But if they get an agreement on this before he gives this speech, he will take credit for bringing peace to the Middle East, when in reality, what you just said is the truth. He caused this problem to begin with. He funded it by funding the state sponsor of terrorism in Iran, who allowed Hamas to do what it did. And I did that just sickens me, man. Trump, 5 days can't get here fast enough.
Trump, the threat of you'll have all hell to pay or whatever the quote was, I think that's ultimately what did it, because I think they know Donald Trump is a man of his word. Wally on Facebook, by the way, and we're interacting with you guys. So if you do have a question for one of our guests ever, not just today, feel free to write in and we'll do our best to ask that question if we see it in time. But Wally was saying, you know, could we show proof of life? I agree. We should don't just take these terrorists at their word saying, oh, yeah, you know, X amount of these hostages are still alive. Make them record video and allow that person to speak to show that they're alive and that, you know, I don't know.
Israel holds all the cards as far as I'm concerned. You just tell them when the 33 hostages show up in a bus and we've counted all of them and see that they have a pulse, then we'll hold up our end of the bargain and we'll release your terrorists back to you, most of whom we'll end up having to kill on the battlefield.
I mean,
that's sad.
How much longer until we have another attack like we did?
It's coming. It's coming. Coming up as well, Kim, what are we going to talk about on Kim and a Whim?
Obviously, what we just talked about is kind of dark. I want to bring more positivity. And that is what I've been seeing happening on the sidelines of football fields.
Yes.
College level, NFL. And I'm sure it's not just football, but I see something big happening. And I am I'm so excited about it. I want to talk about it when we come back.
All right. Back in a minute.
Kim on a Whim.
It's easy to get down when you are watching the news and you're seeing all the devastation going on in Los Angeles and just chaos around the world. But there's something that has really been encouraging to me, and that's been watching some of these recent football games, the bowl games in particular. I've noticed this, even some NFL games I've watched, where players and coaches alike are publicly talking about their faith. And it is so neat to watch. You have these sideline reporters doing these interviews and they're asking, you know, so-and-so, how did you do it? How did your team come back and rally? And one of the things I keep hearing these players say is, you know, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's not to say that they never talked about that before, but I'm telling you, there's something different. There is something going on where almost every single game that I turned on, Ohio State, Boise State, Bengals. I mean, you name it, and I've heard someone on the field mention Jesus. I think something is happening. And it's so encouraging because you think about the church as a whole and how far people have fallen and how woke some of the churches have gone, including right here in the St. Louis area. You go and there's pride flags and, you know, BLM and all the things, trans love is love, all these different messages that to me are just not biblical. But then you have these young athletes who I think have such an important platform, not just to impact the younger guys who aspire to be them, but also the adults who are watching these games. And we can all respect somebody who's a really good athlete who's worked really hard to get where they are. That's respectable. And I think that that's what is so neat, that instead of, you know, the Colin Kaepernicks of the world who use their platform to kneel during the national anthem, these guys are using it in such a great, positive way. Have you noticed this when you've been watching some of these games?
I have, and in fact, I've got one queued up here I want you to listen to. This is Riley Leonard, the quarterback of Notre Dame, and I was unaware of the kid. I've been watching Notre Dame play, obviously, in the college football playoffs. This is one of the first things he said when they interviewed him after they won to go to the national championship.
You guys flipped a switch coming at a halftime. What was Coach Freeman's message to you guys in the locker room?
Yeah, he said, you know, history is written by conquerors. We're holding the pen. We decide how we want to write our history. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in whether you think you can or you can't do something, you're right. We believe that we can do it. And we went out there and did it.
What changed offensively so you guys started moving the football in the second half?
Wait for it.
Shoot, I just started trusting the Lord. I looked up and said, Jesus, whatever your will is for my life, I trust it 100%. And I know this whole offense and this team trusting Jesus and his plan for this season. As far as the question goes, I forgot the question, but we got it going in the second half.
That's so great to hear. And it's so easy to say something like that when you win.
Yes.
But what's been so cool too is a lot of these players and coaches have been saying that even when they lose. We have time. I want to play this mashup. These are some of the other guys. I think it might be a Boise State player and an Ohio State player. They're among these guys who were talking about this.
First, I want to start off and say, oh, glory to Jesus Christ. He's the true champion. Coach D, you changed my life. You changed my life. I did not know God until I got to Boise State. And I serve a true champion. Jesus Christ is the only true God. He died, rose from the dead 3 days later. That's the champion that I serve.
For a kid who grew up loving the Buckeyes your whole entire life, what did that last play, the scoop and score, how do you process what that means to this school?
It just means everything to me. God's blessed his team with so much ability. You know, we wouldn't be here without him, so we give him all the credit first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, our mentality all year is just give us an inch and we're defended. And we got down there with our backs against the wall. Like we've been there multiple times with this group, with this coach. And, man, we just keep fighting. That's what we did. We just give God all the credit, all the glory. And, man, we're going to Atlanta. Couldn't be more excited.
You know what was cool, too, is one of those clips you hear the band playing in the back as he's saying that, and it just pumps you up.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the perfect timing.
Although I heard a band playing in the background with Biden the other day, and it didn't have that.
Didn't
effect.
Really pump you up?
No.
Yeah, I get that. Well, every time Biden talks, I want to take a nap.
Yeah, you know, it's true what you're saying. I'm glad it's a trend. I hope it keeps up. I mean, it shows a renewal, a resurgence of faith on some of these mm-hmm. college campuses where we've really watched the last. Well, even I mean, I can't say that I noticed it particularly changing during Trump's first term, but since the Obama administration, what's gone on in these college campuses has been embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's starting to swing back the other direction.
Mm-hmm. It would be easy in that role, like if you're an NFL player raking in millions of dollars, to have a really big ego. And even these college guys now with NIL, some of these guys are making, wouldn't you say, millions of dollars?
Sure.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars at the very least with these partnerships that they have. And it would be very easy for them to not say something like that. And it is risky because when you do publicly talk about that, you probably will get some hate about it. And even the sideline reporters, you can tell in the way they're asking the questions that they're kind of trying to reroute the conversation. But that what I love the best is when that has happened, I've seen some of these players, it's like every time they ask a new question, they still find a way to slip
yeah,
it in. So it's like,
do.
No matter how much you ask me, I'm still going to still going to say it's Jesus. You know, give all the glory to Jesus.
I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong, that if I had played the rest of that interview with Riley Leonard, he brought it up again, I believe. Mm-hmm. He brought it up more than once during the course of that conversation with that sideline reporter. And by the way, he'll be playing against Ohio State, where a number of those players and coaches have also talked about their faith.
Who loves Jesus more?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Ohio State did a huge night where they had a lot of the football players leading prayer and worship. They were baptizing students. I think it was close to 1,000 students attended that. And then they had some 60 people, including some of the football players, who got baptized that night. I mean, well, when does that happen on a college campus?
Know.
And the football team is leading that. I mean, seriously, can you, and until, what was, when would Jesus Revolution would have been, was it the 60s, the 70s, when that would have happened? Fantastic movie if you've not seen that. But that's the last time I can think of where that really was taking off. And maybe that's starting again.
Maybe we'll see it again on Monday night, because you get to watch the inauguration during the day. And then the college football championship is that night, when hopefully I'll be at one of the presidential balls, although I don't have my tickets yet. So we'll see about that. By the way, we got a message on the caller line wanting me to talk a little bit more about the inauguration and the lineup and what to expect. I'm going to get to more of that for you here at the top of the next hour, so stay tuned. We're going to be back. We got Taylor Riggs from Fox Business as well. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.